Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Serial Quinn Review on this 15th of February 2014, as we discuss the world of sports. I'm your host, Serial Quinn, taking you for the next 45 minutes. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can hit me up on Twitter at William Gerald. You can also find me at facebook.com/SurrealQuinn or go to my website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com. And we begin the program with the Ted Wells Report. The conclusion of the Ted Wells Report. Of course, Ted Wells was an independent investigator who was hired to trying to make sense of this Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin fiasco down in Miami. And 148 pages later, you see detail by detail basically what has been going on for the past 2 years down in Miami. And it's just, and I would encourage you, You don't even have to read the entire report. Just read about the first 40 pages of it, and it'll tell you everything you need to know. Amazingly, and again, I don't think anything came out that we didn't know in terms of the big pieces to this. But I was just blown back by. First of all, that this went on for basically 2 years, and I'm sorry, I cannot excuse. Now the report excuses Joe Philbin, the coach, gives Joe Philbin a pass. I'm sorry, I can't give Joe Philbin a pass after reading what I've read. If I'm Miami, if I own that team, I'm Stephen Ross. Everybody would have to go. Joe Philbin would have to go. Jim Turner, the offensive line coach, would have to go. They already fired Ireland, the GM. Everybody would have to go. I would just have to clean house. Incognito would have to go. Just everybody. Jonathan Martin, it's not going to play for them ever again. So, it's not like a situation where you would have to make a decision on him. But everybody else would have to go. I mean, the idea that this thing took place for over 2 years without the coaches knowing it, I'm like, how could you not know it if you're a head coach of the team? How could you not? There were just too many incidents, too many things that happened for the head coach for Joe Philbin not to know what was going on, or not to have a whiff of what was going on. And again, is this like Bounty Gate with Sean Payton? Is this as bad as Bounty Gate with Sean Payton? I don't know if it's as bad, but I don't know. It's not that far off. I mean, I think if you're the NFL, you have to seriously consider, if you want to be consistent, Joe Philbin getting suspended. How Jim Turner, the offensive line coach, I don't know how he still has a job. And when you find out, the thing that came out of this that maybe we didn't know previously, that this involved, that Cognito was, bullying other players. And that, in the scope of the assistant trainer, with the assistant trainer, two other offensive linemen. So it wasn't just Jonathan Martin. Jonathan Martin took the brunt of the Incognito's bullying and Mike Pouncey's bullying, but it was also, again, two other players, two other offensive linemen and an assistant trainer that had to deal with this as well. And again, I don't know, if you're Miami, if you own that team, I don't know how anybody survives this. This is a situation that you just wash your hands with and just get rid of everybody, as far as I'm concerned. Again, for this to go, I mean, this just did not start in 2013. This started in Jonathan Martin's rookie season, 2012. Because if you don't get rid of everybody, there's always going to be a taste of this with your franchise. Joe Philbin is a part of this, whether he knew or not. It's even worse that he didn't know. I mean, the worst thing would be for him to know and not say anything. That would be the worst thing. But the fact that he didn't know, it makes him look incompetent, and it makes him, it makes him to me look like he couldn't see the forest from the trees. In terms of leading, you're the head coach. You are the leader of the organization as the head of coach. It's your football team. You're supposed to know everything that goes on within, and especially inside the locker room. One thing is things that happen off the field. But inside that locker room, you're supposed to know everything, everything that's going on, period. I have a sense of understanding and knowing everything that's going on. And it sounds like Philbin did not have a clue. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 1-1 after the first period, USA against Russia. 1-1 after the first period, of course. Should be exciting hockey. Should be an exciting tournament for the hockey in terms of the Olympics. Got a lot of, a lot of great players that are spread around. I don't think there's one team that's overly stacked that's considered to be the outright favorites. Canada, of course, is always, always is loaded. But should be pretty much, it's a lot of quality teams in this tournament in terms of the hockey, so should be exciting to watch. 1-1 USA with USA's tie with Russia. Still to come on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll get into Saturday morning headlines, and we'll also get into the NBA's as the first half. As the first half of the NBA is complete, we've come up on the All-Star break. A lot to talk about in the NBA as well. And also, the worst franchise in professional sports right now. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Saturday morning headlines, Roger Goodell last year in 2012 made $44.2 million. And listen, if you have a problem with it, with Goodell and him making $44 million, then you don't, then you don't understand business. When you are the head of a league that profited $10 million, your leadership is going to get a nice piece of that. And again, Roger Goodell, you can say what you want about Goodell. I don't agree, haven't agreed with everything. With everything Goodell has said or everything Goodell has done, but you cannot argue with the success of the NFL. The NFL right now, every year, every Super Bowl is setting ratings records. You watch the ratings of this upcoming NFL draft, which has been pushed back a week to May 8th this year. It doesn't matter. You watch the ratings as in comparisons to other sports. The NFL right now is by far and away the most powerful product in all the sports. And, you know, Roger Goodell frankly deserves to be the highest paid owner in all the sports, without question. So $44 million, he makes $44.2 million in the fiscal year 2012, deserves every cent of it, considering what the NFL is producing financially. And again, Goodell, you know, the owners and Goodell are joined at the hip. I mean, the owners pay his salary. This doesn't come out fans, merchandise. This is about the owners paying Goodell's salary. So those two are joined right now. And the match has been happy because Goodell has put a lot of money in the owner's pocket without question. David Stern leads a Hall of Fame class of 2014. David Stern, again, just seemingly as retiring from the as commissioner for 30 years of the NBA, gets into the Hall of Fame, and Stern was not going to have to wait for long to get into the Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. I'm curious about some other notable finalists include guys like Alonzo Mourning, Tim Hardaway, Kevin Johnson. One finalist that was left off for whatever reason, Chris Webber. And I don't understand how Webber cannot be considered a Hall of Fame, not considered a finalist for the Hall of Fame. And Alonzo Mourning can. Alonzo Mourning played in the league for 16 years. Okay. Played in the league for 16 years. His first 8 years of his career were Hall of Fame worthy. His first 8 years. Even with that said, I never considered Alonzo Mourning to be a dominant player, a game-changing player. He forget about never leading his team to a championship. I understand he won a championship again. That championship was about Dwayne Wade and Shaquille O'Neal. Let's not kid ourselves. Mourning was a bit player on that 2006 Miami Heat team. But Alonzo Mourning, you know, when you look at the top centers, and when he came along, there were some great centers in the league. I never thought Alonzo Mourning as being even amongst the top centers in the league. I mean, you talk about David Robinson, you talk about, of course, Shaq, David Robinson, Olajuwon, Ewing. Mourning was not in that class, not even close. I mean, Mourning was a very excellent defensive player, shot blocker, won a couple defensive player of the year awards. He was a adequate, decent offensive player at best. He was decent offensively. I mean, look at his career numbers. Mourning, for his career, was 17-8 in almost three blocks. That's not, I'm sorry, it's not a Hall of Fame. That's not a Hall of Famer in my book. Again, the last 8 years of his career, Alonzo Mourning, he didn't do anything the last 8 years of his career. So, again, I would not put Mourning into the Hall of Fame. He did not, even if you combine what he did in college, to me, he's not a Hall of Famer. Chris Webber, on the other hand, again, for his career, was 20-9, basically 29-4, and 4 assists for his career. Webber, keep this in mind about Webber. Again, he takes far too much abuse for what he didn't do in terms of not winning a championship. People criticize him, okay, for the timeout in Michigan. He did go to 2 Final Fours and 2 National Championship games. Alonzo Mourning never made it to a Final Four at Georgetown. And he played all 4 years, and he played with Dikembe Mutombo. So I just keep that in mind from a collegiate standpoint. Webber, you know, had years where he would get 27-11, 24-10. Webber had, you know, 22-10-5 assists. Webber had great years with Sacramento. And, again, he's going up against – there was a golden age of power forwards in the Western Conference and the NBA in the 90s, the late 90s and the early 2000s, where he's going up against guys like Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Rasheed Wallace, Amari Stoudemire before the injuries, Antonio McDyess before the injuries. I mean, the West was loaded with power forwards, night in and night out. Even even bad teams on the Western Conference had excellent power forwards. So he's going because these players night in and night out, as Weber spent majority of his career in the Western Conference playing for Sacramento and Golden State as well, in terms of where he started. Again, I think Weber's a Hall of Famer. I can't see how he's not a finalist. That to me is disturbing. Maybe he's rubbed some people the wrong way with how he handled the Fab Five situation, with the Fab Five and what transpired with that situation. But on the basketball court, I don't think you can question Chris Webber as a Hall of Famer, as a Hall of Famer, at worst, a Hall of Fame finalist. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about the first half of the NBA, look forward to the second half, and talk about a budding rivalry between the league's top two players. That's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back.
Hush, not your heart, and don't cry. Your thoughts might understand you by and by. Just move on toward your destination, though you may find from time to time complications.
Correction, they're in the third period now of the USA. Excuse me, the USA Russia game, third period, a couple minutes in, 1-1. Russia's on a power play right now, but it's about the USA is about to kill that right power play, and they're about to get back to even strength. NBA, of course, All-Star Weekend in New Orleans, you had the Rising Stars Challenge in a game that, again, high scoring as expected. Andre Drummond wins the MVP, a fun duel between Tim Hardaway Jr. and also Dion Waiters, who ironically on terrible teams right now. And that probably was the highlight of the first half of their respective team seasons, those two going toe-to-toe in a showcase for the fans. Andre Drummond gets the MVP of the game, sets the record for rebounds in that particular game, 25 rebounds. Yeah, 25 rebounds in the game. A lot going on in the NBA as we head towards the All-Star break. As we head in the All-Star break, first of all, look at right now how many teams can win the championship. And I always like looking at this around this time of year. There are only three in my book. OKC in the West, Miami, and, of course, Indiana in the East. That's it. Now, you want to say, well, where's San Antonio? I don't think San Antonio is a championship team right now. I don't trust them being healthy. They've had, Ginobili with the age. Kawhi Leonard's been banged up. He'll be back. Duncan's been healthy. Tony Parker's been relatively healthy. But you know, Ginobili always, you know, always seems to get banged up. I don't know if San Antonio has enough to get them to May, to get them through May and April, to get them to June. They've had to exert a lot of energy just to keep up with Oklahoma City in terms of best record, having best record in the West, and they have not, despite the fact that 38-14, they have not played well against quality teams. I mean, let's be honest, they are 1-11 against the league's best teams, with that one win coming against the Clippers, a Clipper team without Chris Paul. Again, keep this in mind about San Antonio. And I said this last year when we wrapped up the NBA season. San Antonio, you know, has never went to the finals, even in their glory years when they were winning championships, never made it to the finals in back-to-back years. You know, we talk about, you know, how tough it is for Miami. It's going to be for Miami to make it to the finals for a fourth straight year. You know, San Antonio hasn't been consecutive years. So right now, again, I don't like what I see out of San Antonio, though I still will say, and a lot of people are on the Clippers bandwagon right now. I'm not. I still think that they're the second, that they would be the second bet to make it to the finals once you get past Oklahoma City in the Western Conference. So, because I don't trust the Clippers, don't trust Portland. You know, and the rest of those teams are basically the same, where, you know, you talk about Golden State, you talk about Phoenix, Houston. The rest of those teams are basically in the same boat. There's really, you think about it, you know, I think Oklahoma City is head and shoulders above everybody else. You know, San Antonio is the second best, but once you get, I think, 3 through 8 in the West, or even 3 through 9, because Memphis is the ninth seed and coming fast. It's not a big difference between the 3 seed and the 9th seed, as far as I'm concerned. No, I just don't think there is. I think those teams are closely matched. 3 through 9, 3 through 8. I think those teams are very evenly matched together. As far as the Eastern Conference goes, we know it's a 2-horse race. It's been a 2-horse race for the entire year, and I haven't seen anything that would change that. Brooklyn, I know Toronto's had a very good year, but those teams, the Toronto's the world's, the Brooklyn's the world's, Chicago Bulls have kept their head above water. Those teams are not going to challenge Indiana or Miami. I mean, they're not going to challenge it. You know, those teams just not, it's not good enough. I mean, those teams, again, the Eastern playoffs are going to be horrible until you get to Miami. Now, that will be one of the all-time classic series in recent years. A Miami-Indiana series will be epic. It'll be an epic series. But you're going to wait about a month to get to it. So, you know, that's where the Eastern Conference stands right now. Adam Silver has talked about the fact that he would like it, the age limit to go up to 20. So he wants guys to basically be 2 years out of high school, 2 years out of high school to come into the league. I guess this is certainly to be anti one and done. Listen, I think it's either all or nothing. Either you let them come out, or you go in the direction of having of raising the age limit to 20. I think the one and done has not, to me, I don't like the one and done. I myself, which is, you know, just let them come out of high school. I mean, to be honest, that to me is the most constitutional way to do it. I think if a guy's good enough to play in the NBA, he should be allowed to play in the NBA. And these guys, listen, these guys, they may not be ready to be stars or lead their franchises, but they're clearly, you know, the Anthony Davis is the world. Some of these guys are clearly, you know, even coming out of high school, some of these guys are good enough to play in the NBA. How well they're going to play, you know, remains to be seen. It might take a while, but again, I've always believed that if a guy is good enough to be on a roster to make a team, then they should be allowed to play in the NBA. But if you're not going to let a guy come directly out of high school, then I think I agree with Adam Silver, and the age, you know, the age limit should be 20. 20 would be the perfect age. You know, 2 years of experience, and again, a guy could choose not to go to college. Maybe he goes over a year overseas for 2 years. That's still playing against high level competition, and a guy is getting, he still will be certainly more ready to play in the NBA than some of these players are coming in right now with only 1 year's worth of experience. Again, I think that's something that's going to happen within the next year or two. Owners certainly, you know, will be on board with it, because owners and coaches certainly will be on board with it. Because that's one less year, and this is also a consideration too. That's one less year you have to pay a guy in his prime. So you got to take that in consideration as well. So the later a guy comes into the league, you know, you don't have to. He will not be eligible for as many contracts. He will not be eligible to make as much money as he would coming out at age 19. So, yeah, you'll have to wait an extra year before he can get a major payday in the NBA. The NBA has a rookie salary cap. So that it's always a business factor. Business is always a factor in terms of these decisions, not just for the product on the floor. A budding robbery going on right now between LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Very interesting, because, you know, Durant was basically peppered with Miami Heat LeBron James questions yesterday at the All-Star game media session. And, you know, Durant basically said he was tired of LeBron James questions. Of course, you had LeBron James a couple of weeks ago saying he was jealous of how many shots Kevin Durant gets to take, and, you know, he, of course, doesn't get to take as many shots playing alongside Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. We all know how big of a joke that is. But, you know, and then you had Durant come out saying that he would like to go one-on-one with, basically saying that he would like to go one-on-one with LeBron in the All-Star game. So expect to see a duel in that game. Either one of those two. I'm not going on a limb here, but one of those two is going to be MVP of that game tomorrow. I can guarantee you. I mean, LeBron has done everything in the last 6 weeks to draw attention to himself, to take attention away from Kevin Durant, and that's what it is. I mean, LeBron, that's, you know, it's, and again, he was at, again, I'm not going to knock him for the Mount Rushmore thing. Steve Smith asked him the question, put him on the spot during an NBA TV interview, so can't go too crazy about that. But, you know, some of the stuff some of the stuff that he said, you know, he's done a lot of things to draw attention to himself, like in the last month or so. And again, there's no question that he feels threatened by Kevin Durant. You know, you have now, when it wasn't a debate about the best player in the world, now, you know, he has a guy right on his heels. I mean, that, you know, this time last year, that wasn't even a discussion. Matter of fact, this time last year, we were talking about how big the gap was between LeBron and Kevin Durant in terms of 1 and 2. Now we're talking about how big the gap is between LeBron, Durant, and number 3, whoever that may be, whether you want to say it's Chris Paul George, Blake Griffin, whoever, Kevin Love. You know, those two have clearly separated themselves from the rest of the field as far as once you get past, you know, as far as who is the third, fourth, and fifth best players in the world. So it should be exciting All-Star game. The dunk contest tonight should be great. You know, you have Paul George, John Wall, Terrence Ross, Again, that's another thing. LeBron, you know, bringing up, you know, putting on the dunk, you know, having a dunk contest basically at the end of practice a couple of days ago, and saying that he would win the dunk contest. Well, you know, if you think you would win the dunk contest, then enter the dunk contest. You know, put your money where your mouth is. So, yeah, LeBron's just doing things to draw attention to himself. Again, you love it. I mean, this is what the NBA. The NBA needs they need a Kevin Durant. You need them to meet in the finals. You need them going back and forth at each other. Though Durant says it's not a back and forth. He says that LeBron's been doing most of the talking. So you need a riff, a small little riff between those two. And because beforehand with LeBron, as USA has just scored, Joe Pavelski just scored a go-ahead goal to go up 2-1. You need them not to love each other. I thought that, you know, in the past that it had basically been a love fest with the Durant and LeBron, that they would, you know, they would train together, and it was just been, you know, if I'm Durant, you know, at some point, like this, you know, he's got four MVPs, he's got two championships, you have no MVPs, no championships. At some point, when are you going to get tired of this guy winning, when you can get tired of everybody talking about him? And I think Durant this year has reached that point and is ready to take his place among being the best player in the league. So, again, a nice budding rivalry going on between those two right now. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get into some college basketball and also the worst franchise in professional sports. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. After the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, All Star Weekend in the NBA. We have the Sochi Olympics going on. USA men's hockey up 2-1 over Russia. That would be a sweet victory if they were to take out Russia. That certainly would be gratifying. Not 1980, but regardless, still it would be a great way as USA looking to build off a 7-1 victory over Slovakia a couple of days back. 347-215-6180 is your call number as we discuss the world of sports. College basketball, still a couple of weeks away from Selection Sunday. Still a lot to be determined as far as the number one seeds. The only team right now that has a lock, as far as I'm concerned, that has a lock on the the number one seed is Syracuse. That's it. Arizona right now is struggling. They had some injuries, not playing as well. They lose last night to Arizona State in a crazy game. Of course, they lost to Stanford. Arizona definitely, you know, is struggling without question right now. And, you know, they're losing it. You thought that Arizona had a lock on number one seed about 2 weeks ago, but that is no longer, the case. Again, there are about 6-7 teams where it'd be, you know, Arizona's still in the mix, Florida's still in the mix, Duke, Kansas are still in the mix to be number one seeds. And again, Kansas will drop after this week, after they lost to Kansas State earlier this week. Yeah, again, so it's those last three spots for number one seeds. number one seeds are wide open. Now, Florida can go number one, can go a long way in solidifying its place as a number one seed with a victory over Kentucky at Kentucky tonight at Rupp Arena. That'd be a big game. That's probably that is the marquee game of the college basketball weekend. A couple of other good games: Memphis at Connecticut, Pittsburgh at UNC. Of course, the UNC's game with Duke was snowed out and will be made up next Thursday. So you'll get two North Carolina Duke games within basically like within a 2 week period. Something that's unusual, but because of the bad weather that we've had on the Northeast, on the Atlantic Coast, the East Coast in general, you'll get those two teams playing in the next couple of weeks. But again, Syracuse and Wichita State, I wouldn't even consider Wichita State to be a lock for number one seed. Wichita State is still unbeaten, but their strength of schedule has been awful. Their conference is bad. Almost lost to Southern Illinois this past week. If Wichita State loses one game, they will be out as a number one seed. They cannot. They have to enter the NCAA tournament undefeated to be considered to be a lock to lock down number one seed. That's how bad their strength of schedule is. Again, Syracuse is the only lock, and deservedly so. So it doesn't matter what Syracuse does from here on out. Unless something crazy would happen where they would lose every game, you know, going up to the NCAA tournament, which is not going to happen. But unless something ridiculous happens, you see Syracuse as a clear-cut number one seed and probably the overall number one seed in this tournament. When we return, we'll discuss the worst franchise in professional sports that's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Russia has just tied the game at 2-2 late in the third period. Let me see how much time is left in this. As they won't show how much time is left, but Russia has just tied the game at 2 deep into the third period as the USA is looking 7-16, about 7 minutes left in the second period, in the third period. 2-2, and who knows, we could get an overtime here between Russia and the USA. There's some bad franchises in sports right now. And, you know, there have been some over the past 25, 30 years. I mean, you want to talk about the Clippers and how bad they've been, what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers used to be, what, you know, the Devil Rays used to be, or the Rays used to be. But right now, I don't know if there's a worse franchise than the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns, in a calendar year, have fired the head coach after his first year, the general manager, and the president after 1 year. So Mike Lombardi, Rob Chudzinski, and Joe Banner are all gone. After one year. And I keep reading things. The, the baffling and puzzling thing about this is I keep reading articles on why these were good moves. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if they deserve to be fired after 1 year, then they probably shouldn't have been hired in the first place. That's my line of thinking. I mean, you talk about a franchise that is clueless right now. And by the way, Cleveland has the fourth pick in the draft. Remember, this is a franchise that you to make it even more laughable, you have a quarterback in Brandon Whedon who's demanding a trade. A guy who should be frankly lucky that he's he's playing professional football, that he's in the league, because he's not a starting quarterback. You have a guy who this year was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league this year demanding a trade. That's how bad your franchise is. And by the way, they had the fourth pick in the draft. If I'm Johnny Manziel, I'm telling you right now, this is a time, as Russia has just scored again, and that happened quick. This is a time that I cannot knock a quarterback or number one pick if they say, you know what, I'm not playing here. That's how bad their franchise is. Normally, I say, hey, whoever drafts you, you go there, you make the best of it, and keep it moving. If a guy pulls Eli Manning or Steve Francis or John Elway, I can't knock him. I can't knock a Manziel for not wanting, or Teddy Bridgewater for refusing to play for them. That's how bad. I mean, that franchise has no direction. Did this goal score? Yeah, it scored. It was like barely scored, but it scored. This franchise has no direction. You have an owner who just, I don't know what he, you know, he's hiring people to fire them. You know, it took them forever to find a coach. I mean, they basically were about to wait up until the time the combine started to find a coach. Again, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen the president, general manager, and a coach fired all in the same year after 1 year. Now, we've seen house cleanings, but that's been after, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, 6 years. I've never seen a house cleaning after 1 year. If you're Teddy Bridgewater, you're Johnny Manziel, if you're Jadeveon Clowney, there's no way I would play for that team. There's no way. It'd be very interesting to see who Cleveland drafts, especially if it's Manziel. I don't think Manziel's going to fall that far myself, but there's a possibility he could. But again, if you're the number one pick, do you play for the – why would you even dream of playing for that team with that organization right now? That goal did not count, by the way. So I guess it was determined that it didn't cross the blue line, so across the red line, it did not count. So it still is 2-2 USA, Russia, 4:22, approaching 4 minutes left in the game. Could be headed towards the overtime as Russia and USA is tied at 2. But again, that franchise is just all over the place right now. And there's no hope in sight. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Gorman Review. I will see you next time. Have a great weekend. So long.